This is King World News. I'm Eric King, and you're about to hear a sobering interview with Matt Simmons, who gives some frightening warnings regarding the Gulf of Mexico crisis and BP. Remember to go to our homepage for more interviews. Well, this week we have Eric Sprott of Sprott Asset Management. Eric's interview will be released no later than Monday. We have an interview with one of the greats, John Williams of ShadowStats.com. We also have an interview with Peter Schiff, CEO of Euro Pacific Capital and Senate candidate for Connecticut. Joining us now is Matt Simmons, retired chairman of Simmons & Company International and founder of the Ocean Energy Institute. Matt, obviously, I wanted to have you on to talk about this BP situation, what's happening in the Gulf. There seems to be a lot of things that you've condemned BP for in terms of their actions and things I think you've labeled as a cover-up. What is really happening in the Gulf, Matt?
Well, from what I had a hunch of on day one, when I just watched the footage on television and I saw, you know, this being described as a rig fire. And since Transocean just happened to be one of the best clients I've ever had when I was still actively not only running the firm but doing investment banking, I thought, this is just unbelievable. The Gulf of Mexico is on fire. The rig is just in harm's way. You got to realize this deep water rig is like a, you know, twice the size of an aircraft carrier. And it has 700 gallons of diesel on it. So when BP kept describing it as a rig fire, I said, these guys are lying or they're just stupid. And they're not stupid. And then they also said, this is not our fault. This is Transocean's fault. They own the rigs. Well, that's stupid, too, because the company man, anyone in the business knows, the company man tells the rig what to do. Then when the rig sank, tragically, they couldn't call it a rig fire anymore. So they changed their tune to, this is a drilling riser leak of 1,000 barrels a day. And again, I said, this is just preposterous. 1,000 barrels a day burned up the Gulf of Mexico? Yeah, luckily, I know a lot about both blowouts and blowout preventers and offshore rigs, because that was why I spent 40 years doing investment banking on it. And I think this has to be one of the biggest blowouts in the history of the world because of the I've never seen flames like this. I mean, I've seen a lot of footage of some of the really incredible off, you know, onshore blowouts. And then there was that great John Wayne movie of the big blowout, which was the Hunts Field in Libya. Or that great movie, There Will Be Blood, which is a depiction of the Kern County oil field that blew for 18 months. It was a part of Upton Sinclair's great book that he wrote about oil in 1922. This might be the biggest blowout we've ever had. And to have, I said, why would BP be describing it as 1,000 barrels a day? Until I started reading all the reports about how many corners they had cut and how many times they'd been warned by the Transocean people that you're going to kill people. So obviously, when the blowout happened, they couldn't fess up because they'd all go to jail.
Let me ask you about that, though, Matt. Will they go to jail anyway?
They better. They better because they've killed the Gulf of Mexico, and they lied about it. See, had they basically said, oh, we are sorry, we didn't realize. Now, BP was in a tough position because they've said that too many times. I mean, their safety record things were so awful. I think they were, you know, it was the big lie syndrome. But had they even done that? They would have been praised today for being, you know, candid and fessing up the fact that they made a mistake. But instead, they did exactly the opposite. They conned everybody, including the government, into thinking this was no big deal. And it was painful as can be, to be perfectly honest with you, to be the only person in the industry that was willing to speak out.
Why have you chosen to do that? Because there's a lot of misunderstanding about BP in the stock. I mean, they've got it wobbling around $37 right now.
I chose to do that because I've tried to basically be an honest student of the energy business for the last 40 years. So when I thought that the oilfield depression was going to kill everyone unless they consolidated, I said it. I said in the 90s when we started touting technology that would make things easy, I said, no, we're not drilling enough wells. And when I decided that we were headed towards peak oil, I mean, I just basically, when I believe something, I've done my homework, I think it's kind of my responsibility. I guess I've got too many friends that actually have sacrificed so much of their career by going into public policy stuff that I would never want to do. So I thought, the least I can do is actually be an honest student of energy and speak out about it with no axe to grind.
Are people in danger in these states right now? You talk about the Gulf states.
I believe they are, unfortunately, because of what I'm learning daily by scientific people that are starting to talk about the awful effects of this methanol coming out of this oil. And all these studies that they're now doing, apparently, the New York Times had a very lengthy story that started on page one yesterday, and that was a full page in the middle of the front section about the autopsy work that they're doing on all these dolphins and birds and so forth. Why are they all dying? Because they're not what they're eating. I guess they're all concluding they're dying because they've ingested methane. I didn't know anything about methane. I mean, it's by matter of U.S. law, safety laws, if you're drilling a well in the known presence of hydrogen sulfide, then you have to have a gas mask around your neck. Because if the alarm on the rig floor goes off, you have something like 20 to 30 seconds to put the gas mask on or you'll die. I gather methane is even more toxic. And if this were dry methane, it would go up in the atmosphere, but it's wet methane, and so it just hangs around the surface. And it's basically one of the most lethal gases we know about.
And how do you see this then impacting, as you're saying, as this comes on shore, then this will go into the air even more?
Well, here's the problem that has been assessed by the research specialists of NOAA, including particularly the Thomas Jefferson, is that they now believe through sampling, as opposed to guessing, that the basement of the Gulf of Mexico, about 4,000 to 4,500 feet under the surface, is a giant lake of toxic oil that's expanding by 120,000 barrels a day coming out of the open wellbore, where there is no more casing, there's no more blowout, and basically that lake might be now 400 to 500 feet deep, and all of it's toxic. So all the stuff we're seeing right now is just the scum. And if we have a hurricane, one of the things the hurricanes always do, if they're forceful, is they bring up the cold water. This won't be cold water, it'll be poison.
Well, then let me ask you, Matt, how do you clean that up? What are you looking at as a price?
Well, first of all, you can't skim it off the top. I mean, what we should have been doing, this is the tragedy. Had BP been a decent company and basically said, I believe Exxon or Chevron or I know Total would have done this, they say, this is just tragic. Yeah, I'm mortified it happened under our watch, but it happened. And there's an open hole. There's no blowout preventer. There's no casing. There's no way to stop this. We've got to start cleaning it up. We've got to detonate the wellbore. And we would have 85 days. If for 85 days, there is about 20 miles away from the Macondo wellbore, the Louisiana offshore loading port. It's where all of the supertankers that come into Gulf of Mexico with 2.9 million barrels of crude oil on board unload. Then they go home to the Persian Gulf empty. We could have diverted every one of those tankers over in a few hours and used a known technology in the industry of large diameter pipe and pumped up this poisonous toxic crude and taken it someplace. And I would have taken it up the Thames River and put it on BP's dock. It's a whole different issue. But we didn't do that because you don't do that if it's a 1,000-barrel-a-day leak. So now we have a poisonous lake that there's no way to clean up, and there's no way to prevent it from coming on shore if we have a hurricane.
So the danger that poses, you're saying, to the people of these Gulf states, it's just life-threatening. People will die.
If it were my family, I would basically evacuate now while you still have time, because if we do have a storm and it sends the gook in, we're going to have to shut down the power stations and we'll have a blackout and we'll shut down the refineries. Well, then you got these people trapped in harm's way.
But, Matt, you're talking about a possibility here of tremendous loss of life in these Gulf states along the coast.
It could be one of the greatest losses of lives we've certainly ever had from a natural non-war disaster.
What is the solution here then, Matt?
Well, we have to nuke the wellbore, which is putting a small diameter nuclear device down 18,000 feet and setting it off. And what you do is through fusion, you actually turn the rock into glass, and that entombs the well. So we do that, we're just adding to the problem every day. While BP's saying we've stopped the problem because the riser is no longer leaking. The other thing we need to do is get BP off the airways. So you have no right anymore to use the American airways for your life. Do you think we'd give the Iranian government a chance to basically be the spokesman for peace in the Middle East?
The dangers of a nuclear device down there.
They're zip. They're zero.
They're zero. Okay.
You know, when I was growing up in Utah, when I was in grade school, which I really wasn't paying attention to, they were doing open air tests of hydrogen bombs, the big mushroom cloud. Then all these people, you know, Las Vegas over to St. George started dying of cancer. So that's when we went to underground testing. And for, I think, 20 years, we tested a mile under Yucca Mountain hydrogen bombs. These weren't small nuclear devices, and it didn't even create tremors in Las Vegas. This is 3 miles underwater. It's the only way you create fusion to melt the glass, the rocks into glass. But what I can't figure out how to do is actually start sucking up stuff on the bottom. And all these skimmers is just a head fake. It's like basically taking a wet towel and trying to wipe off your windshields when your car's in hydraulic acid.
Let me stop for just a minute and ask about BP's stock. I mean, it is trading around $37 and change.
Yeah, that's because they've stopped the leak.
Okay, have they stopped the leak?
They've stopped the riser leak.
Okay, is that the real leak, though?
Is that relevant? No, that's a leak. The other's a gusher.
Okay, let's talk about that.
What they're also trying to do is claim that the gusher is basically a hole in the ocean floor, where the seabed cracked. And this is very sophisticated PR stuff.
So their stock is headed where, ultimately, in your opinion?
Well, unless they raise $1 trillion, then I'm not sure $1 trillion will clean up the Gulf. Or they say to the government, no, we were kidding. We would never clean up the Gulf. So you guess.
Well, I was talking to Jim Rickards about this. We're beginning to see BP sell assets. There's a lot of misinformation.
They don't have a lot to sell, actually.
But there's a lot of misinformation out there. They talk about cash flow. This is the cash flow you need for infrastructure and safety things.
Yeah.
And Matt, they have a bad track record on safety anyway, because they probably don't have enough CapEx allocated to that to begin with. So you can't...
They don't have a bad track record. They have an awful track record.
Right. So you can't divert that CapEx.
No.
You can cut a little bit of it. Don't get me wrong.
No, this is a company that basically had an unsustainable future long before Macondo.
Right, but as you begin to sell the assets, really, as Rickard said to me, the company is in liquidation, really.
Oh, yeah, but you know, once it becomes known that there's no way to fix the leak, then people start realizing that you better file a claim right now, and the claims could come in so fast. I mean, I could easily envision the claims exceeding $100 billion.
Well, that would be it. They would be done.
Sure. I mean, I don't know what you could liquidate BP for, but not a lot, because there are not a lot of assets that don't have more liabilities than they do worth.
Right. So what I'm saying to you, though, is if I'm a buyer and I'm coming in and I'm shopping BP assets, there's a liability that maybe comes attached with any purchases that I make.
Well, like, there's a pretty good rumor that Apache's going to buy the North Slope, which is, you know, and they ought to, because BP shouldn't be on the North Slope. And Apache's a very good company. So that might give BP $7 or $8 billion.
Right, but as Apache buys that, is there an inherent liability taking that asset?
On the North Slope.
But what I'm saying is that as BP is liquidating, can't people come back to the Apache asset that they bought and said, sorry, you bought this, but meanwhile, there were all these claims piling up and you never should have bought it to begin with?
That's a bankruptcy question, but I think basically they'd probably be okay if they did it fast. I think the United States government should attach all BP's assets.
Is the government doing the right thing here, the wrong thing?
You know, I don't. First of all, I think the government must be in total confusion because, I mean, unfortunately, we have let BP insidiously control the news. And I've watched these guys on television so confidently telling them that the problem is over. And I gather from a couple of friends up here that know him personally that Admiral Thad Allen is one of the finest public servants we have. And, you know, his biggest mistake is he probably doesn't realize people are lying. We don't have a lot of public servants that start out saying, I'm going to assume that I'm being lied to.
Right, but what I'm saying to you is it always struck me as odd from the beginning. There was this camera down there, and everybody could watch this leak happening.
Well, that was because BP was very clever.
Right, but what I'm saying is you have everybody watching that, and meanwhile you're saying it's really a bigger leak, and it's on the ocean floor.
But again, you know, I have the advantage of the fact, you know, I spent my first 10 years, you know, raising all the money and doing all the mergers that created Oceaneering, so, which is who have 8 of the 12 ROVs. So to me, I know what an ROV can do. It looks straight ahead for 25 feet. But by capturing all ROV, there were no other eyeballs. So no one else could actually see until finally NOAA decided something's fishy going on. So they brought their research vessels out, and they discovered these odd layers of black crude at the bottom through their unmanned subs. But BP kept saying, you guys are lying. There aren't those. We've just investigated that. Well, they hadn't. They just plain hadn't. So the perjury that's gone on has just been astonishing. Because I've been so visible in this, I get all the latest stuff, from including some stupid things, but including a lot of really good data.
Right, but do you have some whistleblowers coming forward to you that are trying to get stuff to you?
Yep.
What are they saying to you?
They're saying, help me. I need some help. Some of the oceanographers on these research vessels have said, Mr. Simmons, I'm so proud of you, but I need your help. I'm having my professional career tarnished by saying I'm lying about this just to get money.
So if we go back to BP stock just for a minute, in your mind, that's a stock that's worth zero.
In my opinion, it is, but that's just my opinion. I mean, maybe it's worth 25 cents.
They're already being looked at from a criminal perspective, and then the damages are much greater, and yet they have this thing trading at 37 and chains.
Well, that's because they've convinced the world that the leak's over. It wasn't a big deal to start out with. And since they've already announced also publicly that they're going to sue all the vendors, all their partners, for gross negligence. I mean, people just read that and say, gosh, I intuitively always thought BP must be clean.
But if it turns out in the end that they were covering things up and they were lying, then that's more criminal charges against them.
Sure it is, yeah. But, you know, once you get in the hole, you probably don't remember this, but I'm 67. So when I was a youngster in Utah, there was a guy that ran for the first district in Utah as a Republican congressman when Ike was elected, and his name was Douglas Stringfellow. And the reason he got elected is he told this incredible story about how he was a courageous prisoner of war in the Korean War. He had his fingernails ripped off, and they broke his legs and was wired on crutches. And he was in the last stage of his second term, running for a third term, when Ralph Edwards on This Is Your Life had him on This Is Your Life. And within hours, people started calling him insane. Doug Stringfellow was never in the Korean War. He was in a remedial care facility in Brigham City, Utah. So for about a decade, to lie was to be called a Stringfellow. So once you start lying, it's really hard. A small lie becomes a big lie becomes a bigger lie.
So if you're consulting the government and they come to you and say, Matt, what do? Do you say round these guys up, put them in a cage, and then let's start really, okay, tell me what you tell the government to do.
First of all, keep BP off the air. Make them, you know, stop letting them waste money advertising. Have the military take over and have the service companies report to the military. The military are worried about that because they say, well, we don't know anything about this. You don't have to. BP doesn't either. The technology and know-how is all in the vendors. And the people at BP claim have actually made the problem. And I'm passing this on through some elected officials who pass it on to the administration because I don't really know anyone in the administration.
You're becoming familiarized with methane gas. Is it an overreaction then to evacuate the Gulf states?
First of all, what I have suggested to several people that are really trying to organize a better response to this, in Louisiana in particular, is they ought to basically get some medical experts that understand methane gas, because there have to be some people, I mean, germ warfare people, and say, if the winds blow in, how far in are people in harm's way? You know, rather than have me guess. If it's only 7 miles, then I'd say I'd have everyone within 10 miles of the Gulf, of the coast of the Gulf, evacuate. I'd err by 30%. If it's 25 miles, I'd have them evacuate. Because once the storm comes, we'll shut. Then there'll be no way to evacuate because you'll have no power, you'll have no gas. And then you're just sitting there like ducks in a bucket.
Is there a cover-up right now? Meaning, are people dying and they're in hospitals and they're dying and we're not being told?
Well, that was this odd story on CNN that I'd really like you to follow up and let me know what you find.
Can you just very quickly, for listeners globally, can you just talk about that, Matt, what you heard there?
Well, it was, I believe, a week ago tonight on the Anderson Cooper show, which I think he's done a spectacular job of covering this. And I mean, for a guy that kind of looked like a dilettante from afar, my heart goes out to him. But one of his people interviewed these two female reporters for NPR, and they told the story about the fact they wanted to trace down this rumor. This is the first time I'd heard any of this, that in the medical clinics of Venice, Louisiana, and Grand Isle, which are these two little tiny villages at the very mouth of where the Mississippi River comes into the Gulf of Mexico, that they were both chock full of people that were extremely sick or dying or maybe even dead. So they got in their car, and they drove down. They're 8 miles apart. And they were astonished to find that both facilities were ringed by armed National Guard to keep people away.
Now, Matt, let's talk about that for just a second, because why would you ring a facility with the National Guard and prevent entry unless you've got something there you don't want exposed?
Obviously, something odd. And what's also odd is there's no evidence, as far as I know, that the National Guard had been called up. So these are obviously people that are members of National Guard units that decided to wear their uniforms. They actually suggested on that story that these might well have been BP employees that were asked to wear their military uniforms.
Just so I understand this, though, Matt, you're saying if you were advising the government right now, you'd find the penetration from the air onshore, you'd take a 30% error rate, and you would evacuate those states. And your big concern here is loss of life.
Yeah, I would first of all get somebody to figure out if and when a storm blows in, assume there's going to be a vast amount of methane, and way more than what we're seeing coming out of the scum now. How far does it move? How much time do you have? Can we get gas masks? If you can't, you better start evacuating today, because I know, you know, Houston, after Katrina, we had Rita barreling towards us. And Mayor White, who's one of the most competent public officials we've ever had, made the mistake of trying to evacuate Houston. And within about 4 hours, we ran out of gas. So when Ike came, they did a totally different assessment. They actually asked most people to stay at home because they realized that with that, it's the fourth largest city in the United States, you can't evacuate it.
Okay, so you're saying the logistics then of an evacuation are messy business. It requires a tremendous amount of fuel and logistical.
And it takes weeks to do, so you shouldn't basically wait until all of a sudden bombs are falling.
Is the government being advised of this right now?
I don't know. I don't have any idea. I'll tell you, when I was on Dylan Radigan's program yesterday afternoon, because BP had just announced they'd fixed the problem, he questioned me for about 5 minutes. He actually said, I mean, how preposterous they fixed the problem. So afterwards, he turned back to the guy that was supposed to be on the top of his program, who was the senator from Oregon because of the financial bill. He said, "Senator, did you hear Matt Simmons?" And he said, "I did." He said, "I don't know who Mr. Simmons is, but I was just stunned to hear about this open hole. I've never heard about that before. If that's true, we need to investigate it." Now, this is the senior senator from Oregon. He just happened to be waiting to talk about the financial bill.
Matt Simmons, retired chairman of Simmons & Company International and founder of the Ocean Energy Institute. Thank you so much for joining us on King World News.
You're very welcome, and I enjoyed being on your show. And I can't tell you, this is such a tragic piece of news. And my heart goes out to all the people in your listening audience.
Be sure to check out the King World News blog each day, where this week we had a guest piece from Ben Davies out of London titled "Money, the Real Stuff." We also had a guest piece from Jim Rickards, which covered China gold and also included a CNBC appearance with Wilbur Ross. And we had a piece on the global crunch, as well as $100 billion in BP Gulf claims.